Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Green Team of the Legendarium, where we cover the books that we want to read that the main Legendarium crew don't want to. I'm your host, Chesky, and today I'm joined by Hiran Fan.
Hi.
I'm joined by Little Red Book.
Hello.
And I'm also joined by Lord Ash.
Hi, everybody.
We have chosen the most unique book we could find for you guys today. It is purported as the worst book in all of science fiction and fantasy, and we're going to talk about it. It is The Eye of Argon by Jim Theus. Now, did you guys know anything? Theus. Okay, that's fair. I wouldn't know anything about how to pronounce it, so.
I learned that from the Wikipedia article.
All right, so this book was published in 1970 in a magazine, issue number 10. And for the most of its life, it's been published without the last page. So if you read it like I did, without the last page, you were very confused until you read the rest of it. What were you guys' feelings on this book? Hit me with them. Ash?
It's so good. It's so perfectly terrible. Like, I haven't read very much fan fiction. I've read some of My Immortal, and so I know that it gets more incoherent and terrible than this. But this is like a perfect confluence of things. Like the best analogy I can find is The Room by
Tommy Wiseau.
Yes.
Tommy Wiseau.
Which is just like, again, just like another perfect confluence of factors that Jim Theus, when he was writing this, he was pretty young. He was like 16, which, like, you know, probably about what I could write at 16, maybe better. Just total misplaced confidence in his in the English language and like perfectly derivative of everything in fan, like this feels like every fantasy book that you can, like the early stuff, all of that stripped of any possible redeeming qualities. It's impressive.
No, he definitely read Robert Howard, I believe, is who wrote Conan.
Yeah, this definitely has Conan vibes.
Yeah, Lovecraft, for sure.
Yeah, definitely a lot of Lovecraft. How many times did he say Stygian? It was at least five.
I can look it up for you here. Let's check here. Stygian. Four times. Yeah, four Stygian.
Oh, that's a lot.
Oh, no. He misspelled at least once, I remember.
Well, okay, that's probably true. So more than that. But let's go to Red. Red, give us your first summary, your thoughts of this book.
Well, I think I already gave most of them, except that I really do kind of feel bad that this guy who was 16 put something out there in the world and kind of became the butt end of everybody's jokes. And at some point he said that it was a satire when he was older. And it's like, yeah, no, a 16-year-old isn't writing a satire. It's not a thing. But I just feel bad because it's like, maybe he could have become a writer if somebody had like said, no, we're not going to publish this, but try again. Or something like that. Well,
I think that's more on the editor's fault than his fault.
Well, no, it is. It is on the editors. I just feel bad because like maybe he would have been able to come up with something else.
Wouldn't have this masterpiece.
But yeah, I mean... Jeez, I just feel bad that this poor guy who published something when he was 16, and we're all like, what, 50 years later, making fun of it?
Oh, this is more than 15 years.
50.
50. Oh, 50, yes. He actually blamed the editing so I got the Scholar's edition of this, so I got to read Yeah,
this book is well beloved by a lot of people for a lot of weird reasons.
So there were three essays written after this that I had read. So the first was the guy who went on a quest for the missing last page, and it documented the journey he had. And then there was an apology from the publisher, another one about all of these people, they feel bad, sort of, that they're making fun of the story and they feel bad for Jim Theus. But they all make very clear, it's like, okay, he put a real work of art in work, you know. Yeah, he put something out there, which is more than most people do. And so, like, for that and much, you deserve to be lauded. And they make it very clear, we're not making fun of him, we're making fun of the terrible thing that he did. And then there is a possible scenario where he didn't have the temerity to publish this. He put this in his trunk, he kept it as a trunk story, and then he, you know, had a very successful career as an author after this. Which I think is a nice thought. I don't know, he's dead now, so it's a moot point.
You could just see him sitting there with his typewriter and a thesaurus. I mean, like...
Yeah.
And he could have, you know, he could have kept publishing. This wouldn't be enough to stop anybody. Lots of people have written really bad books and gone on to publish more and more and more. But here in fan, we haven't heard you yet. Tell us your feelings about The Eye of Argon.
I am so glad we read this. I'm definitely going to reread this a lot in my life. And I would recommend it to almost all of our listeners, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I think this was, you know, when people talk about, oh, it was a fun book, when they really mean it, the book was crap, but I had fun reading it. This book is a lot of fun.
Yes. It's very short.
It's really short, yeah. It's like a short novella. Took less than 2 hours to read. It's fun. It's got everything you want in a bad story. And it was worse than what I imagined. And I imagined pretty bad.
Now, let me just ask this question, you guys. When it started off okay, were you worried a little bit that it wasn't going to get bad? Because when I first read like the first chapter, I was like, okay, this is a little bit bad, but it's not like worst quality ever until I got to like the second and third chapter. And then I was like, oh yes, now it's steeply diving downhill into the waterfall here.
You okay, Jessica, I think you are showing how much crap you read. Because when you told me that, I didn't believe you. And then I read chapter one, which is incredibly short. And I was like, no, this is probably the worst thing I've ever read. And at the same time, you're still correct because it does get so much worse.
Well, it's like that whole thing where authors like really refine that first chapter. They really refine it.
Yeah. I'm saying like it was bad, but I wasn't like, oh, these first chapter is like the worst I've ever read. Like, I'm pretty sure I've read worse, but like, you know, it quickly went downhill from there. Ashley, looked like you might have something to say there.
Until the second chapter.
When I was reading the first chapter, I was just like, wait, I need to read that again. So the first chapter took me probably like the same amount of time as the rest of the book.
It's all 7.5 chapters?
Yeah, I was just in disbelief. I was like, what's going on?
it's hard to acclimatize yourself to it, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah,
like after the first chapter you get used to it, like and you kind of go with the flow, so to speak, but at first you're just like, what the hell is this? Like that's wrong. That's wrong. What is this punctuation?
I don't know what he has against I don't know what he has against rodents. Like, one sentence is, small rodents scampered about, occupying themselves in the daily accomplishments of their dismal lives.
even the rodents in this story have dismal lives. Like, what the hell does that mean? Yeah.
Okay, let's try and... this is really funny. And I took probably like 2 pages of notes, just because I was so having fun with it while I did it. But let's say... I just don't even know where to start with this, you guys. Like, Red, did you have something you wanted to talk about with this book while I just try and stop laughing for 5 seconds and think for a minute?
Sure. Guys,
Red, why don't you just give us a summary of what happens in the book?
Okay.
Surely that'll be easy for you, right?
Right? Okay, so a barbarian meets some guards. He kills them.
Grignar.
Yeah.
Gotta give his name.
Why does this guy hate vowels? I mean, the author seems to really hate vowels. he gets in a fight. He kills him. He gets captured. He gets thrown in prison. This prostitute that he was going to engage in wholesome behavior with gets almost sacrificed, and then they escape.
That's wholesome. Story.
Okay. That really is the whole story. Now,
literally use the word wholesome. He's in the bar picking up this girl.
You know, the prince slash king slash noble slash I'm not sure what else he was called everyone sluts.
Oh, really, everybody. You know, everyone was a slut. I trapped it. Everybody is a slut.
The peasants are, Grignar is, the prostitutes.
Actually, I think the prostitutes are the only people not called sluts.
Oh, okay. At least he's not slut shaming, I guess. He's just
slut shaming. Would you guys agree that this could be a perfect example of bad purple prose? Because every word has an adjective or an adverb behind it. You never does somebody just walk. It's, you know, poorly walk. Or this is my favorite here. Let me see. Where did I put it? Yes. He was describing a nose, a lith, opaque nose. And my first thought was, are not all noses opaque? Do people have transparent noses that I haven't seen? Is this, like, why did you put that in the whole book? Like, it's just a nose.
I had some headcanon. I imagine that everyone except for people who are specifically have opaque noses have transparent noses in this world.
Oh, and
like, don't explain it, right?
Here's one more thing. Did you guys catch that Agafnid, the advisor, he resurrected himself?
What was that? Oh yeah, I thought he just got like stabbed in a non-lethal location.
He definitely dies.
Definitely dies. Okay.
I think that Gregnuk, or however you say his name.
Grignir.
Whatever. There's no vowels, guys, in this guy's name.
There's an I.
Okay, there's one vowel.
Okay.
I think he kills somebody by kneeing them in the nuts. Is that a thing that happened in this?
That is the woman who, when she is about to be sacrificed, she hits somebody, and I have it written right here, between the testicles. This was a very, very precise shot.
That was quite wordy, that whole paragraph about hitting someone in the testicles and their organs. Tice really likes his organs and his various descriptions of organs.
He has like the most tenuous grasp on human anatomy that I've ever read. Like at one point, so he's Grignir is attacking the noble. The paunchy noble's sagging round face flushed suddenly pale, then pastily lit up to a lustrous cherry red radiance. His lips trembled with malicious rage while emitting a muffled sibilant gibberish. His sagging folds and flabs rolled like a tub of upset jelly, then compressed as he sucked in his gut in an attempt to conceal his softness.
Yeah, it's just...
He really liked the words lust. Lustily.
Yeah.
The lustfully enhanced vegetation. I'm not quite sure what that means, but it's very evocative. I like when he got into the chamber with the maiden. Maiden.
She's not a maiden.
And one of the priests just drops, seemingly dead from a seizure, an epileptic seizure specifically.
Yeah. I was like, what? Why did that happen? Then
after he's like this, Grignir didn't do anything. He just fell down from a seizure. And then afterwards, apparently the seizure gave him what, superpowers?
I took it as he went into a barbarian rage.
Yeah. Well, I think what happened was Tice learned of the concept of a Chekhov's gun and had Grignir set this trap up like midway through the book. And when he was writing, he decided he needed to bring that back in because otherwise, you know, he would have to write that section out earlier. So he just had this guy come back and, you know, get skewered.
So here's the passage for you, Hiren. Grignir acted in the only manner he could perceive. First off, that's just weird. But giving vent to a hoarse, throat-rending battle cry, he plunged into the midst of the startled shaman, blah, blah, blah. A giant skull-faced priest standing at the far end clutched desperately at his throat, coughing furiously in an attempt to catch his breath. Lurching helplessly to and fro, the acolyte pitched headlong against the gleaming base of a massive jade idol. So he bangs his head on the jade idol, and then he struggled helplessly, the victim of an epileptic seizure. It's like, okay, that's very advanced for like this book period that we're dealing with.
Does he?
I'm surprised that Grignir, this barbarian from out of town, obviously knows about you know, epileptic seizures.
He's a very cultured barbarian. I mean, he also, this was one thing I was like, okay, this is a clear, you wrote this the way you wanted it, but he kills the guard at the inn, right? The guard comes up to him and is like, hey, I want to, you know, take that prostitute out. And so he kills him. Then he puts his sword away completely while the guys are like standing there threatening him. And then they threaten him and he's like, oh, I can't get my sword out in time to stop these guys. I better just do what they say. And yep. It's like, you like patiently like put your sword away and like waited for him. And then you decided to, you know, it was futile.
The plot needed to happen, Chesky.
That's right. The book would have been over if he didn't.
Oh, yeah. And the plot was so weird. He escapes and he goes down a level. Then he opens a chest up, or a thing up, and goes down another level.
Mm-hmm. An aperture. He opens an aperture.
Sure, sure.
Oh, did you see the portal? I like the portal.
Oh dear. So I love like that he refers to blood as life fluid.
Life fluid is good. And then suddenly everything is crimson.
Life fluids all over. Yeah. You know what? I like the social critiques.
Social critiques?
Yeah. Yeah, Greek mirrors. These civilized people, they don't know what's what. They care about is treasure. He says as he rips this emerald out of the statue that he found stuffing it in his bag.
Did anybody else get surprised when the emerald turned into an ooze and tried to eat him all of a sudden?
The red is so out of left field. The
red emerald.
The elusive red emerald. That's probably worth a lot.
Yeah. So
the red emerald that remained is a dark red blotch upon the face of the earth, blotching things up.
So my copy of the book, as I alluded to earlier, was missing the secret last page. So my book ended like this. You know, Grignr felt the blackness closing upon his eyes, but held on with the last ebb of his rapidly waning vitality. He could feel its grip lessening as a hideous gurgling sound erupted from the writhing maw. The jelly-like mass began to bubble like a vat of boiling tar as quavers passed up and down its entire form. Done. I was like, so that's the end? Like, did I got published like with that ending on its own? Like,
somebody had to go on a quest to find the last page.
Yeah.
Ash owning a scholar's copy of this, the idea of going on a quest for the last page of this.
I'm going to buy it. I was just reading it on the internet, but I like this so much, I'm definitely buying it.
Yeah. So funny. And I mean, love that
even the scholar thing was like $3.
Yeah, it's not much.
I'm getting physical copy.
He got he was in his dungeon for like 2 days, and he lost all track, all knowledge of measuring time, all knowledge. You guys, he couldn't tell
for 10 years.
And then right after that, he tells us exactly like how he could measure the time.
Yeah,
he's like, if you consider that you sleep for this amount of time and then you eat for this amount of time, it might have actually been this, but I had no idea.
He had slept 3 times and been fed 5 times since his awakening in the crypt. So clearly, you know, you've slept, you know, 3 times. That's 3 days, buddy. Like,
he probably also read the Count of Monte Cristo.
Yeah.
Well, did you guys? So you wouldn't have caught this, Chess, because you didn't read the last page.
I did read the last page.
Oh,
later.
Later? Okay. Jim Tice is the winner of the J.T. Rakosh Award for Excellence.
I don't really know what that.
Well, so in the scholars edition, they try and figure out what exactly this means. Nobody knows. It might have just been like the typist, that his name, and you know, it was just like a in joke. But you know,
yeah, who knows?
Controversy rages.
I typed this thing. It was great to type it.
And I don't think I've ever heard anybody refer to speaking as they ejaculated in a pleased tone. And
J.K. Rowling did it.
That was a bad move on her part as well then. Nobody should be saying that for talking.
Yep.
I want to know what wearying bustily is.
Wait, which what?
What Carthena? Carthena. At one point, she queries bustily.
Yeah, she boobs boobs.
I don't know. Maybe she went like this with her boobs and like made them.
Queries bustily.
She's yes. like, hello.
She's referred to as a nair lady. I never figured out what that meant.
There's so many things in this book that are like that. I love how in the first like chapter he describes what an axe was. A large double blade, double-edged axe, a long leather wound or wound oaken handle transfixing the center of a weapon's iron head. Like, yeah, I can picture that in my mind already, buddy. Like, I'm sure everyone in the world has seen an axe or at one point or another.
It's like, how can you have so many descriptions and still leave the reader wondering what the heck is going on?
Because they're contradictory.
Well, did you guys catch that the entire story, Grignir is wearing a G-string?
Yes, yes, yeah.
Not only is he wearing a G-string, when he's hiding the rat skeleton that he has, well... So, Grignir slipped his right hand to his thigh, concealing a small opaque object beneath the folds of the G-string wrapped around his waist. Where was Grignir hiding that?
Oh, dear Lord. How many times in the story does he use the word woman?
I'll tell you. One second here. Let's see. Woman. None.
That's what I thought. He was
woman,
female.
None. Woman, once. And female, 21 times.
He also says femme at one point.
Yes, yes. My favorite part. Carthena, daughter of Minkardos, Duke of Barrowin, whose lands border along the northwestern fringes of Gorzom. I was paid as homage to Agahim upon his 30th year. Husked the femme.
I mean, you can almost just choose a location in this anywhere in this book. And it'll be hilarious to read.
All bangers all the time.
Hey, Grignir, you doubtless grew careless while giving vent to your lusts. But let us not tarry any long, lest we overtax the fates.
Do you have a favorite section where he referred to his eyesight or ear?
Oh, how great his ear, auditory skills. Is that how they put it? Something like that.
I think once he referred to a rat's eyes as beady gray organs of sight.
Yes, right. It's if not for his keen auditory organs and lightning steeled reflexes, you know, and the trap he disables at one point kills the priest who's chasing after him, and he's like, "Well, good thing I did that." Like.
Well, the catapult was just sitting there ominously, like, guarding over the door or something. It was so weird. It was such a weird phrase. I should have taken notes.
Seemingly utilizing the speed of thought. Grignir swiveled to face his unknown foe.
So I gotta say one thing that... this is gonna sound so stupid. One of the things that really bothered me, like, made me upset and angry... is his repeated interchanging use of the words shaman, priest, and acolyte, because those are not the same things.
Nope.
They're just not. I'm just like, I don't, yeah.
Sometimes it was shaman, some was shaman, sometimes it was shaman.
Yeah, like
S-H-M-E-N.
No, it's shamans when it's plural. It's not shaman.
There was one sentence. It was the single gap puckered repeatedly, and I was like, "Oof, let's refrain from using those words in that order for this book, please." Like, if you want to use it in your personal life, you go right ahead.
At the beginning of the story, I was looking up a lot of words that I didn't know.
Did it turn out they were all just misspellings?
They were mostly misspellings, and a few. That I'm certain he just looked up in a thesaurus for a word that would actually fit.
Yep.
Like dust racked, the wrong rack, dust racked climes of the Baron lands. I think it's supposed to be Baron.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure what he meant by climes, but climes is just a word for like an area that's a climate. So I'm not sure what he meant.
You could do climes for like mountains.
Okay.
Like a dust track climbs. Kind of that's area. Another thing. Yeah.
He refers to the grass. Sometimes in one description, we're in what seems like, like a sand dune or a very, very dry, desolate area. And then sometimes he's referring to like falling on the grass. A sword.
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 A sword.
Yeah. That is an actual word. He just uses it very strangely.
When he's talking about finding tracks in ancient tracks in the dusty climate. That one really threw me for a loop too.
Oh yeah.
He uses suckered, which means to help, like suckered his capture or something. It was really bizarre the way he used it.
He just keeps describing as like people being set upon, people as being leashed on them, which is
wrong.
Also odd. Yeah.
Yeah.
And also the weird pseudo King James dialogue that happens at this.
Reeking, he put two times. Like one was he wrote down that it smelled of something, but it was supposed to be like destroying something. So I was like, oh, that's a wrong one. It's just one W. He's all missed, but you know, kind of an important one.
The lady that he saves later, who kills somebody because she literally couldn't help it. Apparently, at one point, the sentence is blah 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 blah. Saith her.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, there's this weird pseudo King James-ness in parts of it.
Yeah, he changes the way that it's active or passive all the time. Oh, it's so good.
I feel really legit. 50 years later, we're still making fun of this.
This has got to be preserved somewhere important, right? Like, is this in the Library of Congress?
It needs to be.
Yeah.
Did you guys see the illustrations for it?
I see them
yes,
now.
Yes, I did.
You did?
I, for one, welcome them with open willingness to the Library of Congress.
Well, Jay Rickosh, I think, is the one who did the art. Or he did some of the art.
Did you notice some of his sentences ended in question marks when they were actually statements?
Yeah, like, that's probably because the period and the question mark were like right next to each other, and the type was just like, screw it. I like how when Grignir is captured, like the inciting incident is okay, he's trying to have sex with this prostitute, and then this guard is like, hey, no, that's my prostitute. And then Grignir just kills him.
They actually had sex.
Did they have sex?
It's not really explained.
He mentions that she's such a good lover.
Well, he does say you make love well, wench.
Yeah, after which like he pulls
he just kissed her. All he did was kiss
her. Yeah, so this is what happens.
I think there was like a scene transition where like he pulls her.
How else would he know
that she makes love so well?
I'll read it out. Engrossed Titan ignored the queries of the inquisitive female, pulling her towards him and crushing her sagging nipples to his yearning chest. Yeah. Without struggle, she gave in, winding her soft arms around the harshly bronzed hide of Grignir's corded shoulder blades. As his callous hands caressed her firm, protruding busts. You make love well, wench, admitted Grignir, as he reached for the vessel of potent wine his charge had been quaffing. A flying foot caught the mug Grignir had taken hold of, sending its blood-red contents sloshing over a flickering crescent, leashing tongues of bright orange flame to the foot-trodden floor. I like foot-trodden floor. That's a nice turn of phrase.
I love how the only time he uses the word blood is when it's not referring to anything that's blood.
Yeah. Blood is life fluid. Everything else is blood.
He also misspelled blood, I think, three times. Maybe blod or B-L-L-O-D. I think I saw that one at least twice.
Yeah. Also, how is the wine both blood red and bright orange?
Don't ask questions okay?
Because accordion's blood is orange.
It like oxidizes very quickly and turns orange, I think. Yeah. Wait, no, so this is wine. No, I think.
I think between the first and second, there was like a transition where they made love, and then suddenly we're after that part.
No, it's just the kiss. What happens is
the soldier interrupts them, and he's like, "That's
how would you know she makes love well?"
Well, okay, Jim Tice has not had sex.
Exactly. He's heard the phrase make love, and he doesn't know exactly what it refers to, but it's something that men and women do together.
It involves crushing sagging nipples. I know that.
I love that in response to this, he just he chops off the guy's head.
Yeah.
And it's just not even like, just get away from me and like deal. He's just like, oh no, I'm a civilized barbarian. I'll chop your head off.
Well, the fact that they would even get in a fight over a whore is so ridiculous. Because you can just wait your turn. She's going to be there 2 hours from now. I mean, that's his job.
The next sentence is just, you know, like in the confusion, the soldier's fellows confronted Grignir with unsheathed cutlasses. And then the literally next sentence, he returns his sword to his scabbard. So I don't know any barbarians, but I don't think I'd put my sword away if... maybe it was his other sword, and Hurin's right, you know?
He's just so nonchalant about it. Yeah, well, I'm also confused as to why his like the guy he killed was described as bovine.
Yeah. with a nauseating thud, the severed oval... I don't know how many times you referred to ovals in this story, but it's way too many. The severed oval toppled to the floor as the segregated torso... of Grignir's bovine antagonist swayed, then collapsed in a pool of swirled crimson.
So
it would be five ovals.
I can kind of see bovine, because when you say it, you usually mean somebody kind of dumb and slow, because cows are dumb and slow. So maybe?
I guess. I don't know. Mostly I see women calling women cows. I'm trying to be generous.
I've been very mean. I'm trying to be generous with the adjective bovine.
I don't know. It's tough to say many good things. I mean, he put words in order and they made sentences. Some of the sentences were really long. Some of the sentences were really short. Chapter 7 is like literally a paragraph and a half, while chapter 7 and a half is like 12 paragraphs.
why are there half chapters?
Let's see.
Only two of the chapters half chapters?
3.5 is the first scene where we just we get to see the woman being situated in the altar ready to sacrifice. And then 7.5 is them escaping. And fighting the last little bit. So I don't know why, but that's kind of how they are.
I think it's a really interesting thing that Jim Tice did, having a gelatinous cube be the final antagonist of the novel. Evil King. The Evil King just like kind of kills in a happenstance. I had to read it a couple of times to make sure the king was actually dead. But yeah, he just comes across him and I think cuts his head off too, right?
That's a good thing. King was very, very evil.
He was like, and fat.
The peasants are unhappy. Give them more taxes. Yeah. Surely they'll love that more.
Yeah, and he's this... when you first meet him, he got loosely flowing robes on his chunky self with two prostitutes chunky. On either side.
I remember that.
That's just living life.
And all it took to kill the gelatinous cube, though, was a single torch touching it.
Yeah. Who knew?
Who knew a cube's one weakness? Fire.
The king was also a prince.
I mean, the priests were also acolytes, so...
He was... they were a lot of things to a lot of plain people.
When you get promoted in this world... Yeah. When you get promoted in this world, you don't lose your previous titles. You just accumulate them, I think. That's really interesting world building.
I love that.
I didn't have headcanon for that.
I love that we, in chapter 3.5, we get the first mention of the Eye of Argon. A priceless gleaming stone capable of domineering the wealth of conquering empires. .. The Eye of Argon. Like it's something we've been hyped up to, and then we're finally seeing it, and it's like... Nope, that's just, it's an emerald. Okay, cool. Like,
What does it even mean to domineer the wealth of conquering empires?
I would guess it's just worth so much that you can conquer empires with it.
It is the only red emerald I've heard of, so.
Maybe it's magic.
That's sort of fair.
Well, it is magic. It does turn into an ooze.
That's true.
Turns into an ooze and then an eyeball.
And a red blotch that blotches everything up.
That's so funny.
Doesn't it pucker at some point?
It does pucker at a couple points.
For me, it turns into a stigmatic pole.
How a shapeless mass slithered from the quagmires of the stigmatic pool of time, only to degenerate into a leprosy of avaricious lust. It's like, what a sentence! What a sentence! I would never have enough confidence to write that sentence seriously.
Like, right, and like have people read it? Yeah.
Exactly.
So, just sometimes more, less is more. And this needs a lot less. I will say that I want
Ash. But then we wouldn't be reading it.
Yeah, that's true. I want to say I want Ash to run a D&D campaign based on this book.
You know what? We can probably arrange that.
That would be amazing.
I think I would need to get in like the headspace of Jim Tice to do that justice. Like before every session, just like give myself a severe concussion and then drink a lot of alcohol. And then someone needs to like slap me awake so I don't fall asleep, and then I can, you know, exposit. And then I think I could get pretty close to this.
The sad thing is I don't think he was drinking when he wrote this.
No, he was stone cold sober when he said, "In that fleeting moment, the grim mystery of life was revealed before Grignir's ensnared gaze."
Who is Mirific?
It's his god. Ideas? Yeah.
He's god, I think.
I love Mirific.
It would have to be that.
It's such a good curse. Or the beard of Mirific, if you're getting really serious.
Such a silly, funny book. I'm glad you guys beard of Mirific. Found it. Whose idea was it to read this? Was it yours, Ash?
No, it was Hurin's.
It was Hurin's. Where'd you hear about this, Hurin? How'd you hear about this?
I don't remember. It's been on my radar for at least 3 or 4 years. It's just
interesting.
You see it every once in a while. He's like, this is like the worst thing I've ever written.
It's literally all over YouTube. Like, people playing the game.
I'd never heard about it until Hurin brought it up in our chat. And then
I forgot that I signed on to this, by the way.
Did I make three lifelong fans of this book?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I was already a fan.
I'm just tempted. I'm kind of curious what rating I should give it. Because on a skill wise, it's really low. But like on an enjoyment wise, it's really high. It was a lot of fun to read.
This is like a 20 on enjoyment.
Yeah.
And it doesn't overstay its welcome, which I really appreciate.
Yeah. It's all 7.5 chapters of it.
You know, Jim Casey understands.
I can't read a novel length of this, but yeah, this is good.
Ooh, should I make Era read this for my podcast?
Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's short, which he likes. And he said that the shorter something is, the less good it has to be to satisfy him. So
there's another joke there that we're a family friendly podcast.
Is it about chodes?
Sure.
Okay. Grignir has a chode.
It's a it's you can like fit the, so the, much in a lustful vegetation over there.
The lustful vegetation. Oh god.
Yeah, it was the vegetation was lustfully enhanced by the moonlight's dim glow or something. I was like, do you look at vegetation lustfully? Is that what I'm trying to pick up here from this sentence?
It wasn't moonlit. It was moonlighted.
Oh, excuse my correct wording.
No. But moonlighting is something completely different than something being moonlit.
Well, at one point he lusts after a soldier.
Yeah, the very first
he lusts lustfully at a dying soldier.
Grignir's emerald green orbs glared lustfully at the wallowing soldier struggling before his chestnut swirled mount.
Yeah, Grignir's a deviant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shall we read the first chapter to give our audience a feel for what this is like?
I think that's a fair thing. This book is, you can find it online for free. Or you can pay for the Scholar's version.
Highly recommend
it. I love that the cover of the Scholar's version, the cover says, this Scholar's ebook edition includes both historic and current scholarly research concerning the history, the text, and the author of this unique work, with essays by Daryl Schwitzer and Lee Weinstein, plus a sincere apology from the publisher himself. All right, listeners, we're going to play the game, at least with the first chapter. Maybe we'll go further if we're really feeling it. But we're going to start with Hurin, and then Red, and Ash, and then me, and then back to Hurin, and we'll see how long it takes us to get through the first chapter. So, Hurin, you're up.
Okay. The weather-beaten trail wound ahead into the dust-racked climbs of the barren... Sorry.
Oh, that's a mistake there. Red, you're up.
The weather-beaten trail wound ahead into the dust-racked climbs of the barren land, which dominated the large portion of the...
Wrong.
Dominates.
Ash, you're up.
Oh, that was faster than I expected.
Well, I don't read out loud anyway, usually.
You can start a barn.
I think you could start where they messed up. You don't have to start at the very beginning, yeah.
The barren land, which dominates large portions of the Norreglian Empire.
Norgolian Empire there.
No, there's an R. It's Nor.
Norgolian, yeah, but you said Norroglian or something.
Yeah, Norregolian. Sorry.
You said it wrong. We'll let you,
okay.
Let's just excuse me here. We make a mistake just until somebody starts laughing while they're reading.
Too late. Age-worn hoof prints, smothered by the sifting sands of time, shone dully against the dust-splattered crust of earth. The tireless sun cast its parching rays of incandescence from overhead, halfway through its daily revolution. Small rodents scampered about, occupying themselves in the daily accomplishments of their dismal lives. Dust sprayed over three heaving mounts in blinding clouds, while they bore the burdensome cargoes of their struggling overseers. Prepare to embrace your creators in the Stygian haunts of hell, barbarian, gasped the first soldier. Only after you have kissed the fleeting steed of death, wretch, returned Grignr. A sweeping blade of flashing steel riveted from the massive barbarian's hide enameled shield as his rippling right arm thrust forth, sending a steel-shod blade to the hilt into the soldier's vital organs. The disemboweled mercenary crumpled from his saddle and sank to the clouded sward, sprinkling the parched dust with crimson droplets of escaping life fluid. The enthused barbarian swiveled about, his shock of fiery red hair tossing robustly in the humid air currents as he faced the attack of the defeated soldier's fellow in arms. Damn you, barbarian, shrieked the soldier as he observed his comrade in death. A gleaming scimitar smote a heavy blow against the renegade's spiked helmet, bringing a heavy cloud over the accordion's misting brain, shaking off the effects of the pounding blow to his head. Grignr brought down his scarlet-streaked edge against the soldier's cruelly forged hauberk, clanging harmlessly to the left side of his opponent. The soldier's steed whinnied as he directed the horse back from the driving blade of the barbarian. Grignr leashed his mount forward as he hoarsely piercing... I messed up. I said as his instead of as the hoarsely piercing battle cry of his wilderness-bred race resounded from his grinding lungs. Hurin, you're up.
Okay. Hoarsely piercing battle cry of his wilderness bred race resounding from his grinding lungs. A twirling blade bounced harmlessly from the mighty thief's buckler as his rolling right arm cleft upwards.
Is that a laugh there? Okay, Red, you're up.
Oh, dear Lord. And I've lost my place because I started giggling so hard.
Let me start with a rolling right arm cleft upward.
Oh my gosh, where is it? I suck at this game, guys.
I can't help you with this, yeah.
Or the twirling blade bounced off harmlessly off the mighty thief's buckler as his rolling right arm cleft upwards. Sending
yep, that's it right there.
You said upwards.
You made another mistake there. Yeah, sorry. It's Ash's turn.
That's why I'm saying it should be giggling and not mistakes.
What it should be is... five shots before you start reading.
Oh, dear Lord.
That'd be fun.
Or a shot every time you make a mistake.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good idea.
We'd all be dead, guys.
It's true. All right, Ash, you're up.
A twirling blade bounced harmlessly from the mighty thief's buckler as his rolling right arm cleft upward, sending a foot of blinding steel rippling through the Cimmerian's exposed... Ripping. Is it?
Oh. It's ripping, not rippling.
God!
I'd let you keep going if you want, though, okay?
Yeah, sure.
No. Exposed gullet. A gasping gurgle from the soldier's writhing mouth as he tumbled to the golden sand at his feet and wormed agonizingly in his deathbed. Grignir's emerald green orbs glared lustfully at the wallowing soldier struggling before his chestnut swirled mount. His scowling voice reverberated over the dying form in a tone of mocking mirth. You city-bred dog should learn not to antagonize your better. Reining his weary mount ahead, Grignir resumed his journey to the Noregolian city of Gorzam, hoping to discover wine, women, and adventure to boil the wild blood coursing through his savage veins. The trek to Gorzam was forced upon Grignir when the soldiers of Orin were leashed upon him by a faithless...
It's Kryn.
It's Kryn.
Kryn.
Yeah, soldiers of Kryn.
Oh, God.
I just realized that he says Gorzam and then Gorzam. Like, literally the next sentence.
Oh,
he changes
this
voice. All right, here, I'll take over for this last two paragraphs, hopefully. The trek to Gorzam was forced upon Grignir when the soldiers of Kryn were leashed upon him by a faithless concubine he had wooed. His scandalous activities throughout the Cimmerian city had unleashed throngs of havoc and uproar among its refined patricians, leading them to tack a heavy reward over his head. He had barely managed to escape through the back entrance of the inn he had been guzzling in as a squad of soldiers pounced upon him. After spilling a spout of blood from the leader of the mercenaries as he dismembered one of the officer's arms, he retreated to his mount to make his way towards Gorzam, rumored to contain hordes of plunder and many young wenches. For any man who has the backbone to wrest them away.
Rest them Chapter away from 2.
To wrest them away from themselves. Really?
From the city,
or drunken
of course.
Guards, apparently. Yeah.
So if you listen to us reading that and you don't want to read this story, I don't know what to tell you. Plebeian. Just
go in you for fun.
Philistine.
Go in for fun. Yeah.
It is so much like The Room. I thought about that this whole time I was reading.
Shorter, too.
And yes, it is shorter than The Room.
Like, I love watching The Room, but it can drag.
All
once
right,
you get to the fourth sex scene, I think, when they recut the same footage.
Also, go watch The Room if you haven't.
Yes, go watch The Room, preferably with a lot of other people who are belligerent and rowdy.
All right, I think we are up to final thoughts here, you guys. Ash, why don't you start us off? What is your final thought for this book?
Oh, man. My final thought for this book. I aspire to have the confidence of Jim Tice one day. I can't say that he has a good grasp of English. I can't say he's a good grasp of narrative. I can't say that I can understand all the things that happen in this book, but you know what? He had guts publishing this. He had guts putting this out in the world. So I take my hat off to him, and I aspire to be more like him. You know, I think, you know, what the internet needs is more people just putting their garbage on it.
Great, Ash. Thank you so much for that wonderful thought that you've shared with us. Little Red, what is your final thought for this book?
It must be experienced. You just have to experience it.
You just must be experienced. Okay, I like it. Hiran Fan, you're the one who brought this to us. Tell us your final thought.
You're welcome.
Great final thought. Really? All right.
Really?
The only thing I can say about this is, like we've all said, it's worth it, not from a literary standpoint, besides from what not to do, but just from a having fun. I definitely think I'll be reading this again. I mean, 7.5 chapters, you can't go wrong. It's more fun than most books you've read just from counting the sheer number of errors you can find in it. Even in the corrected versions you can find, there's still plenty abound. So That's going to conclude our episode, you guys. If you want to talk with us about anything we covered or missed about this book, or if you want to try and play the game with us again, and you can check us out on the Legendarium's Discord. You can find us in the link. Give a shout out to Horizon Brave for starting the podcast. Thanks to the Legendarium for loaning us this little corner of their media empire. Thank you to our panelists, Ash, Red, and Hiran Fan.
Good night.
You're welcome.
Later.
I'm Chesky, and I hope you guys read this book. Goodbye.
I've had too much experience reading ridiculously pretentious Malazan stuff on air.